The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman is underwritten in part by Community Capital of Vermont, Green Mountain Power, The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, and by Let's Grow Kids, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Should people who make a mistake, even a criminal mistake, get a second chance? That's the focus of our second half hour, and we'll be talking about this with Mickey Wiles. In 2005, Mickey Wiles was charged with embezzling more than $300,000 from Ben & Jerry's, where he was the chief financial officer. Wiles pleaded guilty to a federal charge of wire fraud and served 2 years in federal prison, where he also became involved with Alcoholics Anonymous. After his release, Wiles became executive director of the Turning Point Center in Burlington, which assists people in recovery. He later joined the drug testing company Burlington Labs as the chief financial officer. He's now founded Working Fields, which helps people get a second chance and find a job. Mickey Wiles, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
What happened at Ben & Jerry's when you were involved in the embezzlement?
Sure. Well, I actually started my recovery back in 1991, went into treatment for alcoholism predominantly. And at that time, I became a member of AA and joined the recovery community. And you know, my life got better. Things got immensely better. My life, with my family, with my job, all of those things. What I did is I just kind of showed up at AA meetings and participated on a fellowship level. After doing that for 3-4 years on a regular basis, I started drifting away. A year after that, I ended up getting the job opportunity with Ben & Jerry's in Vermont, and I packed up my family from the Boston area and moved up here. And nothing bad happened. However, I kind of took the approach that I was good. I'm okay. I really don't need AA or any of that sort of thing. And nothing terrible happened. I didn't pick up a drink. I didn't relapse in that manner. And life continued to get better. And that went on for several years, for over 5 years. However, as my position progressed and I was continuing to do what I do, one of the things that I didn't do in my recovery was deal with the underlying issues that resulted in my alcoholism. I dealt with the symptoms. Drinking or drugs are a symptom of underlying issues. And because I didn't really deal with the underlying issues, those defects in my character came back into play. And even though everything looked good on the outside, I was really driven by power and money and that sort of thing. I really wasn't rationally thinking. I was had a really poor perspective on my life, and you know, I took advantage of my situation at Ben & Jerry's and used some of the company funds, generally through padding of expense reports, and it became an addictive behavior for me while I was there for over a few year period of time. I got to the point where it really was starting to, I was feeling a lot of guilt, a lot of shame about it. Nobody else knew about it, and I was keeping it all in. As a result, I decided to move companies. I said, the only way I can really stop this is by leaving Ben & Jerry's and looking for another job, which I did do, and I became CFO of Seventh Generation, left Ben & Jerry's. And that was fine. I went to Seventh Gen and I was able to stop that behavior because I was in a new environment. And however, when I left, I knew that I was taking a risk. I was taking a chance that the fact that I had left Ben & Jerry's, that this may be discovered. And sure enough, 6 months into my new job at Seventh Gen, I got a call from the Unilever attorney who now owns Ben & Jerry's. And they said, we have a problem. And I knew right away what that was. I really took a hard look at myself and said, what do I need to do? And I knew that, because of the experience I had with AA and recovery, that I really had to get back into that. I returned to counseling, returned to AA, and really started doing the work to turn my life around. And I had 18 months before I was sentenced. I pled because, I was ready and willing to take full responsibility for my actions. I served 2 years in federal prison.
Did you also make restitution to Ben and Jerry's?
Yes, I basically liquidated my 401k, sold my house, really liquidated all the assets I had, and before I even went to prison, I paid everything back, but about $50,000 of it, and have made payments since then.
What was the impact on your family?
Oh, sure. It was substantial. My family had no idea. Wife and three kids. Everything looked good on the outside. Realistically, that was the hardest part of it on me, was what I had done to them. And, it took a lot of work. I'm extremely grateful because I still have my family. I've been married to my wife for 43 years, and I have three wonderful children and grandchildren, and our lives have been restored. And, part of that is because they all worked hard, and also I worked hard. I really worked hard at my recovery and have tried since that significant mistake in my life. I've tried to live the best life I can and do the next right thing. And, here it is 14 years later, and, I've accomplished a lot in that time period, and I know we're here to talk about some of that.
Do you feel that the folks at Ben and Jerry's, what is their view of you? You've taken a very public role and obviously gone to jail for what you did there. What have you heard from your former colleagues?
So one of the things about being in Vermont is Vermont's a great community, very forgiving and accepting. I've had incredible support by several of colleagues and associates over time, some immediately and some as time went on. I've had an ongoing relationship with Jerry Greenfield and has supported me in many different areas, supported me when I was director of the Turning Point Center and ongoing through my career. It's everybody's choice whether or not that they choose to forgive or forget me, and I'm sure there are people that don't. But the reality of it is I've had, I've been extremely grateful for the way that I have been received in this community and the way that I was able to turn my life around in this community.
Embezzlement feels like it's an epidemic in Vermont. It feels like not a week, certainly not a month goes by that we don't read about another case of embezzlement. Small towns, little nonprofits, big towns, everywhere. In fact, I went to a talk that the CFO of the Vermont Community Foundation gave in which she talked about the phenomena, why Vermont is the number one place for embezzlement, I think, per capita or whatever in the country. So in your own experience, how does it begin? You didn't sign up for Ben and Jerry's thinking you were going to take money, but somehow it began. So how does it begin? How do people understand this phenomenon?
Yeah, it's like, it really is like any other addiction. And addiction, as I said earlier, is a symptom of underlying issues. And that can come out in many different ways. It can come out in stealing money. It can come out in the use of substances. It can come out in the use of food. It can come out in sex. And there's all different ways that people can act out. And really what they're looking for is some sort of relief. They're looking for a relief from the issues that they have inside and they haven't been able to deal with, and they're feeling a lot of pain. And so whatever they're doing, they're dealing with that pain and looking for relief. And, I can't speak to why there's more of it in Vermont. And, you know, I hear we're the per capita of just about everything, and I think it's a lot because of our population base. So, you know, I don't know if that statistic is something that is just because of that reason or not. But I do know that the reason why people do these things is because they have issues that they haven't dealt with, and they're acting out in various ways to give them some sort of what they think is going to be relief, what turns out to be just creating a larger problem in the end.
What did you learn from prison?
Well, for me, prison was actually a fairly incredible experience. As I said, I had 18 months before I went there, and I had really done a lot of work on myself between counseling and the recovery program and the recovery community in Burlington. And by the time I went, I was in a pretty good space, and I went in with the attitude that you know, I need to make the best of this and be of service as much as I can. I went to a prison in Massachusetts that had 1,200 inmates, and it was a high-security prison because it was a medical facility. I had some medical problems at the time, and that's where I was sent. And so we had people from all different walks of life in there because of the high-security prison that it was. And I got involved heavily with the recovery program inside. I became a facilitator in nonviolent communication. I taught finance classes. That there were some mandatory classes that everybody had to take, which is basically teaching people how to balance their checkbook and do budgets. So I was the instructor for that course. I taught an entrepreneur course, which was really meant for that was an elective course that people could take while they were there. So, you know, my experience was really positive in the fact that I really felt that I was able to work and help other people as they get ready to go on in their life. And, you know, of course, I would not recommend this life for anybody, but it was something that, you know, I saw and interacted with people that, you know, I just would never see and interact with in Vermont.
You have been very public about your experience, both your crime and recovery. In 2016, you were very involved in the Ban the Box campaign. Explain what the Ban the Box movement is about and why you became involved with it.
Sure. Well, first off, VBSR, Vermont Business for Social Responsibility, was one of their main legislative objectives that year. And I was a member of VBSR through the company I was with. And I went to VBSR and told them that I'd be happy to support them in any way that I can on this effort. And what the effort is all about is Ban the Box was job applications could have a question on the application that asks whether or not you have a criminal conviction or not. And the Ban the Box bill was a movement to get that question removed from job applications. The intent wasn't that companies shouldn't have the right to ask people if they have a criminal conviction. Of course they should be able to ask that. But the intent was to be able to get individuals who may have criminal convictions and have taken the appropriate action and turned their life around, give them an opportunity to at least get in the door of a company and explain themselves, to be able to say, here's what I did, here's the action that I've taken since then, and here's how I'm living my life now. And it just provides people the opportunity to tell their story rather than have their resume and application thrown in the wastebasket before they're even given a call.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking with Mickey Wiles. He's the founder of Working Fields, which helps people get a second chance and find a job. Mickey, who gave you a second chance?
So when I first got out of prison, I came home and was looking for various opportunities. It was I didn't really think I would ever go back into the financial world based on my background. So I was looking for anything I did. I tried this 100% commission job as a finance consultant for a company out of Chicago that I did for a couple months, or 9 months actually. And it was a a real sales job is what it turned out to be, and I'm not a sales guy, so I didn't do a very good job at it. I'd go into companies and try to help solve their problems and rather sell our services. When I got done with that, I had been out of prison almost an entire year, and I really had no clue what I was going to do. What I decided to do was to draft an email to everybody that I had their email address for, and I just sent out a blast to everybody and said, listen, you know my story, you know what's happened, I've been out of prison for a year, I just want an opportunity, any opportunity whatsoever, I will do anything for you. Bring me into your business, and I will pick up any role that you want to give me, and I don't care how much you pay me.
That's pretty humbling.
Yeah, it is. 15 minutes later, I got a response from a guy who was really an associate of mine when I was working in the ice cream world, and he had a small gelato company he had started like 5 years ago down in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. And he was struggling. He just was having a tough time gaining traction. He was able to get shelf space in the grocery stores, but after a few years, they were starting to hesitate. So he had developed a whole bunch of debt and that sort of thing. And he had just opened a retail store in Needham, Mass. And he called me up and said, you know, I'm struggling. I could use your expertise. I need somebody to run my retail store. And I need somebody to give me some business guidance and direction. But I can't pay you a whole lot of money. And I said, okay, I'll take it. So I still lived in Vermont. My family was all here. And I basically commuted down to Needham, Mass. During the week and ran his ice cream shop, actually Monday through Saturday. Came home Saturday and left again Sunday night. And worked on his business and trying to turn his business around, and I did that for a few months. Interestingly enough, on the way down to Massachusetts for the first day, I got a call from the Turning Point Center in Burlington, which is a recovery center in downtown Burlington, one of 13 recovery centers in the state of Vermont, and I had done work with them right from the beginning. That was one of the first things I got involved in right after I got in trouble, and had been a volunteer for them, had done some board work for them over the years. And they asked me if I was interested in becoming their executive director. And I said, well, I'm taking this job in Massachusetts. So I said, right now, I'm not, as much as I'd love to do it, I just can't do it right now. So I went down, took that job. Turns out I got into it, and we worked all summer long. I went down in like May to try to turn his business around. We put together some proposals and plans, went to banks and to some investors, and it was just so in such bad shape that there really wasn't any way to turn it around. And around September, I got another call from the Turning Point that said, we still haven't filled that executive director position.
I want to, we just have a few minutes left, so I want to make sure we talk about your current venture, Working Fields.
Sure.
What is Working Fields?
So Working Fields is a mission-based staffing agency that specializes in second chance hires, predominantly people in recovery from substance use addiction. And we work just like any other traditional staffing agency, such as an ADECO or a Westaff or Manpower. However, what we do is when we place an associate on assignment, we support them through a technique called recovery coaching. So what we're doing is we assign each person, once they're on assignment, with a recovery coach, and the recovery coach meets with them on a weekly basis. And what a recovery coach does is helps the individual develop their recovery plan. And recovery isn't just about, how do I stay off the substances? Do I show up for treatment? If I'm on Suboxone, am I showing up at the clinic? Am I getting my counseling? It's much more than that. It's all of that, but it's also working on all other aspects of your life, such as housing, transportation, education, relationships, anything that may be something that is a challenge for you or an obstacle in your life. And what the recovery coach does is put a plan together with them, helps them develop some goals and objectives, and then meets with them on a weekly basis to to help keep them accountable to those goals and objectives, and also to help connect them to resources, because we have a lot of resources in Vermont.
Give us an example of what's one of your favorite stories of people who you've helped through Working Fields.
Yeah, so we have a one individual was a guy who had just got out of prison after 12 months, and it was all related to his substance use addiction. He was a heroin addict. He moved into the Phoenix House, and we work a lot with a lot of the sober homes and support houses that are in the community. And anytime you move into a sober home, one of the requirements is you have to have a job. You got to be able to pay your rent. He came to us. He had his convictions on his records, and he was brand new, beginning recovery again. He previously had a year of success at one point, but had fallen off his program and relapsed. And he was a cook. And so we approached Archie's in Shelburne, Archie's restaurant, and they wanted to hire him. They interviewed him. They liked him. The owner of Archie's, Tim Williams, is a real supporter of helping people out. And one of the things that in order for him to get to work, because the bus schedule didn't work that great, Tim Williams actually bought him a car that was going to be paid back through payroll deduction. So he started work for Archie's, got himself a car, and began the payroll deductions. And he went through our whole program 5 months and then got hired on. And he's working. He's that was over a year ago, and he's still at Archie's working today.
How can people learn more about Working Fields?
Well, we have a website, workingfieldsllc.com, that has all sorts of information about us and connections to us, and that would be the best way to find out about us.
What are you proudest of about your journey and your work now?
What I'm most proud of is that we have come up with an innovative solution that helps people who have this huge obstacle of criminal convictions and can't get a job, that we've been able to go to companies and create a solution that they feel comfortable with, knowing that the person is being supported, and they get to try them out on a temporary basis. And it's working. We have 40 individuals actively placed as we speak today, that's only in a year and a half. So we've been able to successfully place many people in that time period.
Okay, well, Mickey Wiles, I want to thank you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
All right, thank you for having me.
Mickey Wiles is the founder of Working Fields, which is a second chance job placement firm. You can hear this and all shows at vermontconversation.com. We are going to be off next week for July 4th, but back on July 11th, so tune in then. And in the meantime, you can listen to our podcast. I'm David Goodman. This is the Vermont Conversation. Thanks for listening.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable child care in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. By Community Capital of Vermont, providing equal access to financing for Vermonters with excellent ideas and the courage and resourcefulness to start and grow small businesses. Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to create a home, business,